This is the I Read Comic Books podcast. This week's episode was recorded on April 10th, 2016. This week, while I, Mike Rappin, was sick, Nick and Tia spent some time talking about comic conventions, mostly because Tia recently came back from Emerald City Comic Con, aka ECCC. They talked about how conventions are, obviously, still very crucial in this here digital age, which cons are better for certain interests, how Artist Alley works, and sketch and submission etiquette. Fair warning, full spoilers for The Wicked and Divine in this episode. There's time codes in the show notes if you want to skip over those bits. And now, this week's episode.
So I'm your host, Nick White, and this is the I Read Comic Books podcast. In case you're wondering, Mike Rappin is predisposed, ill, as you can call it. And in that regard, it's just down to me and one other person. But that one other person is Tia.
Hi.
I'm glad to have Tia here with me. It's great to have you. What we don't have in number, I'm sure we have in opinions and thoughts and soapboxes. So I'm absolutely confident we'll have something to say. And if not, we'll have it on the record that I thought we did and then we didn't. So people can hold that against me.
No, it's going to be awesome. I am just saying, Mike, but you're going to have to like up your game when you come back because we're going to be so awesome without you.
Exactly. I think Mike, you need to take a good hard look next time you choose to get sick at the repercussions that come from doing such. I really hope you weigh your options because like you're missing
so
out.
Mean.
you're sleeping through this. You're probably very ill. You don't want to interact with anyone, but you know, just weigh your options. Hopefully Mike keeps this in. That being said, what have you been up to, Tia? How have comics been? More importantly, how was Emerald City Comic Con? Do I have that right?
Yes, you have that right. It was pretty spectacular, and I'm completely exhausted and coming to you from my couch in my pajamas where I will be for the next, day until I have to drag my carcass to work. The con's still going on. I had to leave early because I need a day of recovery before I can be a functional human again, which is, you know, there are worse things than laying on your couch in your pajamas reading comics after a comic con, so I can't really complain.
But you didn't come away with the con flu, right? I mean, if anything else, this is the rest and recuperation needed to make sure you don't end up with the dreaded con cough or whatever they call it, I suppose.
Con cough is good. I think con crud, I've also heard that one. Yeah, I also had to fly across the country. So between the con and the flying, I am knocking on wood that I managed to stay healthy. So far, so good.
Yeah. So far, so good. If you look at how other people on this podcast and for DTC have been faring lately, I have to admit, things are not in your favor, but at least for now, and hopefully at least for the next foreseeable hour or hour and a half, you won't come down with something.
You know, I'm not saying that I made a voodoo doll of Mike to absorb the sickness that one would normally expect to be struck down with after a con, but I might have done that. I'm sorry, Mike.
Yeah. Well, I mean, hopefully he at least hears this by the time he's well, so it's not like he'll have too much of a vendetta, but you never know. You never know. Right, Xander? Just kidding.
How have you been, Nick? How have comics been for you?
Comics have been pretty good. I had a decent amount of time to read this weekend. I got through a couple things went over to my parents to record today and hold myself up for most of the day because my dad also has a stomach bug. So I've been, conducting my own form of isolation over here. So you'd be surprised when you close the door and don't want to leave how much comic book reading gets done. But what have you read this week?
Well, it was a pretty big week for me, as many listeners might have surmised by now. I'm a huge fan of The Wicked and the Divine, and it's been on hiatus because they do the publishing schedule where they finish an arc and then they take a month off and then the trade comes out and then there's a month and then the new issue finally comes, and that was this week and it was so amazing. I'm gonna try and be coherent about it because it was just so good.
Sure. No, that's understandable. I know what those image publishing schedules are like, where sometimes your book disappears for so long, you don't even, I mean, it sounds like with Wicked and Divine, you don't have this problem, but sometimes an image book shows up in my pull and I'm like, oh, that's still a thing. I totally forgot.
Yeah.
And then it's like, don't worry, after this issue, we're going to disappear for another 2 months, and then you'll wonder where we were again. But yeah, tell me about it. I admittedly don't know too much. I know that it's Gods meets American Idol meets me attempting to summarize this in 15 words and probably not doing it any vague amount of justice. But yeah, tell me what I need to know.
Well, the main storyline has followed this fan of the God / pop stars named Laura. And she befriends a couple of the gods because she's trying to help solve this murder that one is being framed for. And, you know, things go down with that. And then she ends up kind of more integrated into the pantheon. She's friends with more of the gods. And she thinks that she might have been imbued with some powers herself. She can't get it works for her one time and she can't get it to work again. And it's really bumming her out because she's just obsessed with pursuing godhead, basically. And at the end of the second arc, which ended on issue 11, I'm going to spoiler it for you guys if you haven't read it. So, like, come back in about 20 seconds if you don't want to be spoiled for issue 11. Fate, this old woman who kind of is in charge of the pantheon, Fate comes to her, turns her into the goddess Persephone, and then immediately kills her.
I was going to say, from what I know of Persephone, that means you've got a one-way ticket to the underworld, right? I mean,
See, that's the beauty of Persephone. It in fact means that you have a return ticket as well.
Oh, right, for spring, right? The whole season's thing, exactly.
I don't know how they managed to work out the timing, but so that happened in issue 11, and then issues 12 through 17, the commercial suicide arc, were when Jamie McKelvey was working on Phonogram, so they brought in all of these guest artists to do kind of spotlight issues on various gods, which were really great. And I think there were one or two that contributed to this main story arc, but for the most part, that was kind of
not really tabled. Canon building.
It just, you know, that was a pretty big thing to leave us on. So it's spring now. It's April.
Sure.
Persephone is back, and she is really fucking pissed off.
Well, it sounds like one of those books where if you actually have more than a brief understanding of sort of outside knowledge, it actually sort of lends itself to the narrative. In this case, it sounds like how well one's versed in mythology can actually help you possibly predict where this book ends up. I mean, based on what you just said about Persephone, is that true of other aspects of the book?
It's difficult to say at this point. Gillen is really good at writing in such a way that when something happens and then you reread from, you know, if you read back, you're like, oh yes, I see where this was leading to now that I know what the end was, but
everything falls into place.
Yeah.
That's so rewarding when that happens.
It's really great. His work, I think, really, really is meant to be read and reread, which is nice. And, you know, the premise of this book is that they all are supposed to die within 2 years. So I'm not really sure that, but that premise actually seems like it's being called into question. So this Fate character, the old woman, there are some gods who are aligned with her, and then there are others who are kind of on Persephone's side. And there's this issue in particular. First of all, oh my God, I'm so glad Jamie is back. I mean, I liked the other artists. I really enjoyed in particular the Tulalote issue. Brandon Graham did a great job. You know, so it was nice to have guest artists, but I really miss Jamie. And he stepped it up to 11 for this issue. I don't know how he keeps getting so much better. He like just keeps topping himself. And this issue is just gorgeous. And same for Matt Wilson. The colors in this are exquisite. So just for the artwork alone, this one like knocks it out of the park. But it's so exciting. and there's a lot of action and a lot of intrigue, and there's like really shady shit going down. So I think that, yeah, I'm going to just be making like screeching pterodactyl noises once a month for this arc.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. I was going to ask when I had heard that thing before about, you know, they're supposed to die within a certain time period. So I'm glad that's being called into question, because otherwise, when you said, you know, they were investigating a murder mystery, I was kind of thinking to myself, it seems kind of a moot point to be worrying about that when all of these people are going to end up dead within 2 years anyway. So,
Well, I think that the implication is that, or I mean, it's not an implication actually, at the Wickediff panel, Kieran specifically said that in the past, the pantheons were not, like people believed in them, but there wasn't irrefutable proof of them. And that's different for this, pantheon, that the murder mystery sort of thrust their realness kind of more into the spotlight and made it more difficult to question their existence in a way. And so, there's a lot about what was established as like, this is the rules of the world, are being just, I guess, I don't know, pushed or questioned a little bit in world, sure. Which is interesting.
Oh yeah. No. And anytime you sort of set up a structure and these are the rules and this is how things operate, and then readers kind of get used to that, and then you're like, haha, maybe not. And then everyone's like, okay, interesting. And then you have some readers who get mad, and then other ones who kind of roll with the punches. But it sounds like something like Wickedin Divine and someone who's probably used to reading Kieran Gillen isn't going to get too upset over something like that.
No, I think at this point you can trust that there's going to be payoff. And, you know, so much of the satisfaction of reading these books is trying to piece together the breadcrumbs to try and predict where things are going. And half the time I'm wrong, but it's fun to think about. And that's what I think is really nice about these books, is that it's not a passive reading experience. And so you get really invested, and you like when she became Persephone, immediately everyone was like speculating about how much they should read into that. Does that mean that she's going to come back? And there's this other,
right.
You know, what about the other gods who've already been killed? You know, so it just like, it lights a fire under you to really think critically. And I think that's so great. And not all comics need to be like high literature, but I think, I think for people who want a little more,
engagement.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to say intellectual versus not intellectual, because you can totally just read them for fun.
Sure.
They're beautiful, yeah. Just to read for fun. But if you...
But they're layered.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So yeah, Wickediff 18, it's gorgeous. And a lot of amazing stuff happens. I'm just going to say, the last page, like, I die, so go read it.
Okay, well, once I, and I know this is not going to make any friends, but once I actually pull my... copy of the first trade off of my shelf and read it, I will let you know. That book, I feel like it was one of those books that sat there for a while, and now I feel like I'm too daunted by what I would have to do to catch up. But after our discussion, maybe I will pick it up. I mean, after all, basically David Bowie's in it, right? So it can't be that bad.
It's true. David Bowie is Lucifer. Actually, you should pick up the hardcover. It has hundreds of pages of writer notes in the back, and also like just a little ficlet that Gillen wrote after Bowie died about the Bowie inspired character Lucifer going to visit David Bowie.
That's definitely something else, but yeah. I'm sure. I mean, this book clearly has a fan base that you don't see with other books, really.
It's very, very dedicated. And I'm going to be posting a lot of pictures on the Wickediff cosplay Tumblr of the meetup that we just had. It was spectacular.
All right. Well, our readers will have to take a look for that then, I suppose. Readers, listeners, right.
That totally
nailed
took
it,
me
Nick.
A minute too.
Is this a podcast or what?
Hey,
Xander, you can keep that in depending upon how inept you want me to look. So just go right ahead.
What did you read?
Well, I got through more than a couple things. I think I picked up a few of those. Comixology had that deal where if you bought a trade, you got three image number ones for free.
Oh, wasn't that great?
Yeah, well, Kate strong-armed me into Revival, which I'd read the first issue of before, and I thought it was all right, but she's like, oh my gosh, you gotta do that. And so just to make Kate mad, I got it, but instead of reading that first, I went ahead and read some of the number ones. And so I read Wayward Number One by Jim Zub, who I was recently reading his Skull Kickers, and I really liked that. And this book is definitely different. They've sort of described it as like Buffy, which, again, I'm not going to make any friends by saying this, but I have neither read any of the comic nor like seen any of the show.
I'll do you one better. I actively dislike Buffy. There, I said it.
Oh, okay. There we go. Okay, so I'm actually even in the clear on that. So people have said it's like Buffy meets like Japanese mythology, which is, again, is something I know next to nothing about. But it was interesting. There were a lot of notes in the back where they actually talked about the different mythology and sort of demons and creatures they used. And I always like liner notes and stuff like that. So I read that. I read a little bit of, gosh, this is like, everything is like a Comixology sale I'm reading off here. I read Incredible Change Bots by Jeffrey Brown. He's the guy who recently did those Jedi Academy cartoons.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I actually met him last summer because when he was a kid, he used to go to the comic book shop that I go to in Grand Rapids. And so he did a signing. And I got him to sign a copy of, I think it was like Vader and Son for my dad. And it had a little, he drew a little picture of Darth Vader on the front cover. And it said, like, come to the dark side, Roger. That's my dad. And so that was a perfect Father's Day present.
That is an excellent Father's Day present.
Yeah, so, because he was the one who got me into Star Wars, unsurprisingly. So, yeah, it's a riff on Transformers. It's great. I think it's like the awesome knots and the Fantasticons instead of the Autobots and the Decepticons. And the evil main Decepticon is called, like, Shootertron, and he transforms into a gun. And then one of the good ones is named Balls, and he's a golf cart. And they're like, oh, you're named after golf? And he's like, guys, I'm from another planet. We don't have golf. We don't even know what that is. It's just my name. And
oh my god.
Okay. This
sounds like something I would pick up. This sounds really funny.
Yeah, no, there's another part. There are so many great parts. There's another one where, like, one of them is, like, transforming into sort of the humanoid-looking form, and he, like, turns to his friend, and he's like, we can still fly in this form, right? And the other one's like, what are you talking about?
Try it.
Yeah, yeah. But probably the main thing I read this week was I read Rye Volume 2. Three is actually out. This is one of the few Valiant books I actually read in trade, but I hadn't gotten around to two. And that is Matt Kint and Clayton Crane. And oh my goodness, this book is just like, Clayton Crane's artwork is just amazing. It's every single panel looks like a painting that you could frame and put on your wall.
I love that.
And Matt Kint has just, yeah, he's made this future world that is just unbelievable. And then he had himself drawn into it, which is really, really funny. If you know what Matt Kint looks like, he's got this crazy salt and pepper beard. And I was like, is that Matt Kint? And he's like an elevator service operator in it. And then I look and he's got one of those like worker jumpsuits on, and he's got the little name tag sewn in, and it says Matt. And I was like, okay.
Is that
okay?
Would the timing have worked out for that to be a spoof on Matt the Radar Tech?
Probably not.
Too bad.
But yeah, that would have added even another layer to it. But it's really funny because he turns to Rye and he's like, oh, he doesn't turn to Rye, he turns to another character. He's like, you know, I've read all of the stories about you and I'm a big fan and all of this. And I was like, okay, Matt Kint, I see where you're going with this. But yeah, that's pretty much what I read. Other than I read Magnus Robot Fighter Number One, which when you find a book that is about a person who is well versed in martial arts, who uses martial arts to fight robots, how are you not going to read that? That it's Fred Van Lente, who is known for, you know, comedy stuff, and it's weird. It's super, super weird. But that's what I read this week. In addition to that, I would like to briefly sort of discuss, we actually got a letter this week to the podcast, and I'm going to sort of briefly get at it a bit, mainly because I think Mike Rappin would prefer to discuss it further at a later point when he's not deathly ill. But that being said, we got a letter from a nice guy named Zach. And he was addressing the fact that he is a big Marvel fan, but he wanted to sort of go to bat for DC and defend the fact that DC has been getting sort of criticized for their double shipping and for all of their other questionable practices, many of which have come to light concerning Rebirth, which, as you know, is right around the corner. Tia being a huge DC fan. I'm kidding. Tia was like, Rebirth what? And so he said, you know, basically, if you look at a lot of the things that DC is either doing wrong or that they're about to do implicitly wrong with Rebirth, that you've seen Marvel doing a lot of this stuff for a long time. And they've been doing quite a bit of it recently with all of the double shipping, like I said, the price point being what it is. So I guess I have a few things to say about that, and Tia might have 2 cents to throw in as well, and then, like I said, we'll discuss it later. You're absolutely right, Zach. Marvel has been guilty of these things for quite some time. I guess for me, the issue with what DC's doing is that, looking at it, are we allowed to let DC off the hook because all of the other cool kids are doing it? Personally, and I'm sure you probably agree, Zach, I would love it if nobody was doing any of these things, all of these questionable practices. And so for me, at least, if we can draw a line in the sand and call out DC just because they're already, you know, thinking about doing it or they're planning on doing it, I guess that's a good halfway step towards this. Like I said, it'd be great if Marvel wasn't doing it either.
Yeah.
But yeah, any thoughts on this, Tia? I know that Zach also brought up some stuff about, you know, the idea that you can't blame DC for doubling down on their more established books because their newer attempts at things, probably via DCU. So we're talking Black Canary, we're talking Omega Men, we're talking Batgirl of Burnside. Some of those books have not sold well. And while he says, you know, these books, he's glad that they exist because they're, you know, they're representing a demographic that maybe has been underrepresented. Seemingly, their fan base is not responding in a way that we're either seeing or that seemingly is resulting in a financial success for DC.
Yeah, I would have to, I do have thoughts about that part because I think, you know, if you go on Tumblr, these characters are very popular. So if that's not translating to sales, I would ask DC and Marvel what they're doing wrong, because that is a demographic that I think traditionally spends money on things that they love. So, you know, the marketing and distribution of comic books doesn't really gel with that demographic. It's not exactly easy to walk into a comic shop sometimes when you're a non-traditional demographic for comics. And the way that the success of a comic book is calculated, I don't think is good at accounting for the alternative ways that people might seek out this content, like digital. So I don't know. I would just say that maybe you can add that to the pile of things that the big two should maybe revise about their strategies. And that DC is not the only one who's making these mistakes, because, you know, Batgirl and Mighty Thor, those are the exceptions to the rule, perhaps because Batman and Thor are characters that are already pretty big in pop culture consciousness.
Sure.
Characters like Black Canary or Angela might be a harder sell. And they're just going to have to go a little bit deeper to make those available to the people who want to buy them. They can't always expect, I think, these demographics to seek them out because they don't have a great track record for being friendly to those demographics.
Totally, totally. I completely agree. I know Mike has some thoughts on this. I am absolutely 100% certain of this. And either on the next podcast or in the not too distant future, I think we'll have those addressed. But other than that, Zach, thanks so much for the letter. We always appreciate hearing from fans, and we love that there are people out there that are really digging the podcast and that we're engaging with you guys and getting you guys to think about stuff, and you're getting us to think about stuff. So,
absolutely. You know,
Keep it coming, unless it's negative, then I really don't. No. We're kidding. We'll field everything. I swear.
We're open to constructive criticism.
We are open to constructive criticism. Exactly. Tia put it perfectly.
Unless you're going to write and tell me that you hate the wicked and the divine, in which case you're dead to me.
Yeah, Tia, it doesn't matter what sort of a balanced argument you have when it comes to that topic. We'll probably actually not have Tia on that week, just so we don't have to worry about her, soapboxing for the entire duration of the podcast, which it sounds like it wouldn't be undeserved.
Probably wise.
on that note, let's talk about weekly picks, because I apparently neglected to mention that earlier. Tia, what's your pick for this week?
I'm really excited for Lucifer number 5. This is a book that is written by Holly Black, who has a pretty well-established reputation in young adult fiction, and I love all of her books.
I was going to say, when you said pretty established, I was like, who is this? Who is this? I don't know this person at all.
Yeah, see, okay, so to sort of tangentially tie this back to what I was just saying, here is a person who has a huge following in this very demographic, and I don't know how Lucifer is selling necessarily, but I have not seen it marketed to Holly Black's established fan base, like, at all, which I don't understand.
Interesting.
Because...
And this is not the first time this is not the first time I've seen this, where someone actually comes from a really semi-established fiction background, and then for some weird reason, they decide to not try to push the comic on those people.
It makes no sense to me. Or someone decides not to. Okay, yeah. So in this book, it's like, there's these two hot, you know, angel/devil guys, right? And they're trying...
Sounds good so far.
They're trying to find out who killed God, and they're, like, running around this, you know, the dream world that is run by this really vindictive woman, and then there's this side story... let me back up. So the two hot gods in question are Lucifer and Gabriel, and they've both kind of lost their divinity, and Lucifer has gotten his
win. And they're both on Earth, right?
Yeah.
Like they've both fallen to Earth. Yes,
yeah. So they're working together to find out who killed God. And issue 4 left them in this weird dream world where they're trying to get out of it, actually. And Lucifer in a dream, in Gabriel's dream, claims that he knows who killed God. And Gabriel's like, I don't know if I believe you. But I'm naked and I don't have any wings, so I kind of need to trust you. props to Lee Garbett, who does not shy away from drawing male nudity. And also,
I was going to say, I heard this book is like, this book is clothing optional from what
I've
heard.
So clothing optional, which is...
No suit, no shoes, no shirt. You can read this book.
So much service, yes.
Okay. Uh-oh, wow.
No, you know what? Lee Garbett's one of my favorite artists. I really love his style. It's just like, it's... In this book in particular, it's really moody, and I feel like the characters, like, their physical presence really does a lot for establishing who they are, and their facial expressions are so great. The artwork is doing a lot in this book, as in addition to having this great writer. So there's the two separate storylines. You know, there's the boys trying to find out who killed God. And then there's this separate storyline where on Earth there's this little girl, and she was adopted into this really abusive Christian family. And she gets a hold of this jar containing a demon, and it's trying to convince her to let it out. Only the last time that happened, the woman, like, went crazy and killed everybody. Oh. So this little girl is like, I'm not letting this demon out of the jar. But at the end of the last issue, she's run away, and Gabriel and Lucifer, like, find her, and the demon is like, hey, let me out of the jar. That's the devil. So she does. And that's the cliffhanger. So I'm like, okay, please let the next one come out soon because I'm dying to know what's going to happen here. Who is the demon in the jar?
Jeez. Okay. You know, this book sounds an awful lot like old Hellblazer, what Hellblazer used to be when it was a Vertigo book. That's not a bad thing, but that's the vibe I'm getting from you here.
I'm sure that that's intentional, and I can't imagine that Holly Black didn't do her homework and read up on this universe.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I didn't even think about that in the sense that Lucifer, although I guess maybe you would know, maybe you wouldn't. I don't know if they're actually trying to do anything with the... Sandman Lucifer.
Yes.
If this has anything
yes,
to do with
it is.
Oh,
sorry.
Okay.
I should have mentioned that.
No. I'm embarrassed the light didn't come on for me even remotely sooner.
I will say you don't have you don't need to have read all of that in order to read Lucifer. I haven't read all of it, so you know, I only know kind of in a vague way, maybe like 40 or 50% of those references.
Sure.
But
does this follow?
There.
I mean, okay, I was going to say, because like the only basic thing I remember from Sandman is that Lucifer's trajectory is that he basically gets bored running hell and he basically hands over the keys to somebody else.
Yep.
And just leaves.
Exactly. And so this book finds him, he's in LA running a nightclub.
Okay, yeah, then that's, yeah, I mean, in fact, I think even the whole LA nightclub thing verbatim is what happened in Mike Carey's run on the previous Vertigo book, Lucifer, but I'm not 100% certain. But I mean, I've seen the art for this book. It looks good. It looks fantastic.
It's so
it
cool.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I'm probably going to trade weight it, but
I don't think you'll have to wait long because number 5 is out this week. So that's
not, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
How about you? What are you looking forward to?
Well, I am looking forward to Wrath of the Eternal Warrior number 6. Unsurprisingly, it is a Valiant book. So I'm going to probably discuss some things here that most of the people are going to be like, okay, it's Valiant time. Nick's going to get involved. He's going to get engaged. He's going to feel like he's discussed something that he's excited about and everyone else has permission for the next 2.5 minutes to mentally check out. You're not wrong. You totally can.
Personally, I would love to hear more about Valiant. I feel like they get lost in the discussion a lot. So please climb up onto the soapbox.
Sure, sure. So with Wrath of the Eternal Warrior, the whole series has followed Book of Death, which ended with the Eternal Warrior actually dying, unsurprisingly. Not so eternal, ha 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 ha, stupid joke. And he ends up in this weird sort of mystery realm, which, like, minor spoilers, he ends up in this weird, it's like a cabin in the woods, quite literally. And it's filled with all of these, what seems to be his wife at one point, and then all of these other children, which, like, clearly, seemingly based on their ethnic and nationalities and whatnot, like, seemingly they could not all come from that same mother, and they're all, like, very young. And so you sort of piece together this idea that, like, this is where seemingly all of his kids, because, you know, he's lived for 6,000 years, this is where all of, like, his children have gone to this weird afterlife place as he's, like, traveled the world and everything, and all of these children have ended up here.
Well, that's kind of nice.
Yeah, it's super weird because, like, it's one of those books that, like, doesn't explain any of it. Like, these are just his kids, and they all call him Papa, and you're like, I have a very basic understanding of, like, DNA and genes and biology, but, like, all of these kids, like, did not come from that mom, not only based on that, but the fact that they all seem to be about the same age, so it doesn't even make sense that they could have all been, like, birthed 3 days after each other. So, you know, as you can tell,
suspend
I went down the rabbit
disbelief.
Hole trying to, yeah, exactly, you know, trying to figure this out, and, so he's there, but he you know, he tells his wife, you know, I have to go back to the land of the living. So it's like this weird sort of limbo state. But there's this, like, monster trying to keep him, like, to force him to stay there permanently. So he goes on this little hero's journey to leave. And because he has to go back and protect the Geomancer, whose job is to save the Earth, and that's a whole nother story.
I mean, it's kind of an important job. I don't.
Yeah,
just saying.
Yeah, someone has to do it. Okay, and that was the first arc. This is the second issue of the second arc, and at the end of the first arc, minor spoilers, he comes back into the land of the living and he wakes up and he's in this weird science lab where they've been like running tests on him. And you're like, was that like a Matrix simulation? Or did he really die? Did he really come back? Like, who are these people running tests on him? And everyone was like, oh gosh, what's going on? All these questions. And then the book said, guess what? We're going to do like a 2-issue prologue about his past and then we'll go answer your questions. So... we're in the middle of this prologue, which is like taking place in like 3000, like 2000 AD in like ancient Mesopotamia. And I'm sure it's going to play into this future narrative when we get back there. But, it comes across a little bit fillery, but I know that like all of these events in the past are probably whatever like villain we encounter during this like prologue. I'm certain this guy's probably going to be immortal too, and he's going to turn out to be the baddie when we go back to the present day or whatever. So, but it's got Juan Jose Reap on art, who's fantastic. I don't know if you ever read Clone by Image. He was the artist on all of Clone.
I'm looking him up right now.
Yeah, Juan Jose Reap, RYP. And he did Clone. He worked with Stephen Grant and Frank Miller when they did RoboCop for Boom. He's got a very interesting stylized thing, which is not unlike Frank Quietly, I would say, even. A lot of the lines are kind of wiggly. And
have you ever heard the phrase horror vacui?
Mm-mm, no.
Or phrase, it's a word. It basically is like fear of empty space.
Sure.
Or in art, it just refers to like art where there is no empty space. And that's the vibe I'm getting here.
Everything has something. Yeah, yeah, exactly. He like everything has lines. Even the lines have sketching and the shading has its own shading. Yeah.
Yeah. Yo, dog, I heard you like shading.
I heard you like shading. So that's what I'm excited for. I'm really pumped for when this prologue ends and we get back to the main story, because then I get Raoul Allen on art, who is bar none one of my favorite artists, who was one of those people who broke into comics with a real strong like graphic design, graphic art sort of style, which you're starting to see some of those people now. And I think those people always bring a really fascinating background. But that's my pick for this week. And on that note, we'll be back in a few seconds. We're going to talk about Tia's experiences at Emerald City Comic Con and sort of the con experience in general and why you may or may not want to do it. So basically, we're going to be discussing the pros and cons of cons.
Nice.
And I'll just show myself the door.
No, puns are excellent.
Hey everybody, we're back and we're going to discuss sort of the basics of con going 101, sort of talk with Tia about her experiences going to several, or many comic conventions, and sort of from my perspective, I'm someone who's gone to a few smaller conventions, local conventions. I tried to go to C2E2 this year, but things came up. And I think there are, definitely people in my position or somewhat close that are asking themselves, in this day and age, do I really need to go to a con? Or they're asking, is it worth it? Or what sort of experiences will I get? I think for a lot of people, they look at sort of the modern day and age and say, with the internet, I can, I can hang out on a message board forum and I can download my comics and I can talk with people there. And, not that I'm going to encourage anyone to sit in front of their computer and never go outside, but I think there are definitely people that look at that side of things and say, what's the point of the comic convention in this day and age, and why should I go? And furthermore, if I do choose to go, gosh, how do I deal with all of the questions about how long do I go for? What do I do while I'm there? What do I do to mitigate, not selling off my firstborn son? So that's why we have Tia here. And hopefully some of those questions will get answered, especially the one about the son thing, because
I have some tips for that. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's a big concern of mine. So, I guess, you know, right off the bat, you know, let's just start with that question, of looking at the modern day and age, with all of the wonderful slash terrible things that the internet and computers and you know, buy it now on Amazon offer us. What's the sort of lingering appeal, or what is the new appeal for going to a convention, or what entices you about the whole experience?
For me personally, it's really two things. The first is that I get so excited to meet the artists and writers who make these comics that I love so much. You know, I really want to, you know, see them face to face and get my book signed and tell them how much I like their work. It's really fun to do that. And so that you, I don't think you can get anywhere on the internet. And
I mean, there's a complete difference between that and like paying for someone's signature on eBay, which
right
if you do that and you enjoy it, that's fine, but at least for me, I would find that not emotionally fulfilling, I guess.
It's so much more fun to meet them and have them sign your book for you. And then the other thing that I really like is, you know, I do engage online with people on the things that I love in comics. And it's really fun to meet up with them at cons. And, you know, it's a sort of artificial environment. It's like 4 days that are just completely focused on your interests related to comics. And so there's a sort of electricity, there's a vibe that is just, I don't know, it's a lot more fun and it feels really exciting. So I would say that the face-to-face interaction with people, even if you interact with them a lot on the internet, is a really nice thing to experience.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And I think it probably bears mentioning that, I mean, it's fair to say that you're an avid cosplayer. Is that a, I mean, is that not? Yeah, exactly. And so I think, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, cosplaying is more or less, this is me saying this with no credentials on this, but it's seemingly a very social activity. So, I mean, there must be a benefit there. I mean, how many people love cosplaying, but just basically sit in their house with wearing their costume, take a few pictures and feel fulfilled? Because I can tell you, if I made a costume and it took hours and I spent money, a few, you know, digital photos in my bedroom would not do it.
I will never forget how amazing it felt when I was at AwesomeCon this past summer as Angela, and I had little girls running up to me like I was a goddamn Disney princess.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's definitely an experience you are not going to get, you know, at your house. And, you know, if you're just hanging around in your costume and all of the neighbor kids are running over to hang out with you,
that's, is this something, you know, probably... that you do regularly, Nick?
yeah, this is, I should probably explain how I cosplay. No, I'm just kidding. No, I was gonna say, you know, that scenario playing out just in one's neighborhood is probably not going to go over well. So it sounds like it's a cosplaying. Save it for the con, not for your neighborhood. This has been a public service announcement.
And at Emerald City this past Friday, after the Wictive panel, all the cosplayers kind of congregated, and it was just incredible. There were, oh God, I don't even know how many, more than 50 probably. And it was so much fun. Just, and everyone, you know, had their own take on the costume, and you get to sort of, we took some pictures where we were like staging various panels or kind of making a joke with characters that fight. Sure. You know, it's just a lot of fun. And typically, I think it helps you kind of make instant connections with people. 99 times out of 100, everyone is pretty cool.
I was about to say, this sounds like it's like the most pre-made icebreaker out there that you could, you could probably come up with. And I saw some of the pictures, and what I really liked about what I saw was that it seemed like there were definitely a lot of people not doing the same outfit. And that's not to say if you show up at every con as one of the 18 billion Deadpools that you want to feel disenfranchised or something. Yeah, I guess do what you want. But I really liked that with what I saw about your fan base and whatnot, that people were really motivated to show up as all sorts of characters. Like, clearly all of these different sorts of characters had like resonated with different people for different reasons. And I thought that was really interesting to see.
It's fun to go up to the creator too when they're as their character. That's always kind of exciting, and they're usually really excited to see you. And it's basically just like a lot of positive attention, which is nice.
Yeah, I can't even imagine. But I guess sort of the cosplay thing brings to mind another angle, which is that obviously not all cons are built for cosplay, or they're not all intended to be, what should we say, predominantly focused on cosplay. And so I think, is that something people need to keep in mind? There are different cons for different folks. Is that too much of an exaggeration? Or
I think that's accurate. I don't go to those necessarily because they just don't represent my interests as much. But there are shows like SPX that are kind of, I guess, more indie comics focused, and those are definitely more about the books than about the characters, and I think that most people who attend those are just less inclined to cosplay, and also the material that's predominantly represented there is less cosplayable. So do a little homework, ask your friends, and if cosplay is something that you really want to do, maybe don't do it at these small press indie book shows.
right, exactly. Unless you know this one, you know, small book with like a 200 count printing, you just show up as their character. Yeah. I'm sure they would be shocked. I'm certain they would. That would probably, you know, really make their day. But yeah, I mean, that's sort of what I've heard.
But you have to.
There are always the people that are. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I was just gonna say, even shows that are like kind of more built for cosplay, like, it's really high maintenance. It's hard. Like, the costumes can be hard to wear. You can't carry a bag. You are not gonna get any anything done. You're basically just walking around being photographed. So I would say,
and there's a lot of rules, right, about like what you can and can't bring in at that point, and props.
Yeah,
and
well, they're usually pretty good about posting the rules for what you can and can't bring in, and you typically have to have your props inspected to make sure they comply with the rules for everyone's safety, which is great. And you know, sometimes people get mad. I remember, I think 2014 New York Comic Con, they confiscated a lot of stuff and people were really mad about it. But it's like, that con is so crowded. I would rather that they are better safe than sorry. So just be cool about it, you know?
You heard it here first. Tia wanted your stuff taken away, all of it.
I mean, so. Yes, more than I wanted to be like whacked in the head by your giant Harley Quinn thing that didn't, for some reason, follow their rules. Yes, I'm sorry. It's
right.
Like, okay. Just, you know, but yeah, and that brings me to this point, which is that, like, you know, take a look at what you hope to accomplish at the con. If you want to buy things, if you want to go to panels, like, maybe pick a different time to do your cosplay, a time that you're not trying to do these other things.
So yeah, what I'm essentially hearing here, and hopefully not repeating this too much, is if you're planning on cosplaying, sort of scratch out the idea that you're really going to get around to much else, right?
I mean, yeah.
If you're serious about
plan it. Plan for it to be the thing you're doing right then.
I hear a lot about comic conventions that everyone says, well, they're not about comics anymore and whatnot. And what sort of advice do you have to that? Does that sort of fall into that whole idea that, you know, different cons for different folks? Are there
yeah.
comic conventions out there that are still more comic book oriented? Are there ones people that want that should go to? And are there ones that people that want that should flat out avoid?
Yeah, definitely. I'm one of those people. I mean, I like the other pop culture stuff, but I'm really there for the comics. And my favorite show is Emerald City Comic Con, for sure. It is definitely a good balance between like a really big Comic Con, but also like comics focused. Whereas I feel like people are pretty vocally annoyed by San Diego, and even New York, I feel like, is starting to be just like a dog and pony show of just like pop culture in general. And
sure.
when I go to New York Comic Con, I don't even go on the dealer's floor anymore. Artist Alley is in this like separate area completely. It's like the artist ghetto, but I just go to the Artist Alley. I don't even really bother with the main floor because I'm not there for the toys, and I'm not there to like pay $80 to have my picture taken with some actor. I just want to like, you know, see the artists and the writers and talk about comics. So you can usually get a feel for the show by the guest lists that, you know, they'll start posting who their guests are.
And that's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it should be noted that a lot of times those guest lists will be changed very last minute, for better or for worse.
I mean, they can't help it sometimes, you know, like filming schedules are what they are. Some stuff comes up. Nobody wants to disappoint all their fans. So I always try to give them the benefit of the doubt when they have to change their plans.
And even being someone who doesn't go to cons, but someone who probably spends too much time on Twitter, if you're really concerned or worried, or you're thinking about going to one of these things and you want to know about a very specific, you know, individual, just go check their Twitter. People are really, really good about that, about whether or not they're going to go, where they're going to be, where their booth is. Like, I mean, it's a business, so of course they are. But
a good rule of thumb for any kind of con that you want to go to is make plans and build flexibility into your plans.
Okay.
So like I always, before I go, make sure that I have a map, and not on my phone, because half the time you can't even access anything that would require a signal. So
offline documents is what you're saying.
Okay. I make sure that I have a map, and I actually will like make a list for every day of the stuff that I want to do that day. And I try to group it kind of geographically within the con so that I'm not running around back and forth. You're not going to be exhausted no matter what. So just do yourself a favor and like kind of try and know where you're going and keep things relatively in the same geographic area just to help yourself out. And then I also recommend, especially for things like panels or signings, you know, stuff comes up or stuff will be happening at the same time and you have to kill one of your darlings off of your list. So prioritize. I color code. Like, this color is, I 100% have to do this thing, you know, and then I have like B-list and C-list things. Like, it would be nice if I get around to this, but I won't be the end of the world if I can't. And yeah, so that really, because the first time I ever went to a con was New York Comic Con.
And, oh, wow. Okay, that's
and I walked in, you know, yeah. And
0 to 60, yeah.
Pretty much. It was like, I walked in to the show floor, and I was like standing in front of the Marvel booth, just like turning in a circle, like, where do I go? What do I do? All of my plans just
fell walk out my the door head. Again.
Yeah. It's really overwhelming, and it's not always easy to navigate. So just do yourself a favor and, like, you know, give yourself the tools to really, you know, if you get overwhelmed and it's like when you just forget everything that you want to do. So just have it there written down for yourself, and it helps you make the most out of the time that you have there.
Okay. What about stuff that you ought to bring with you? Are there certain things that are, well, duh, you ought to have this? And then are there also things that most people fail to think of? I know that, correct me if I'm wrong, with a lot of these cons, how does this work? If you have the weekend pass, they'll let you leave during the day for certain things, but if you just have a daily pass, you can't, right? For the most part?
No, I've come and gone at every con I've been to.
Okay.
But definitely check that policy if you're worried about something like that. But I've never seen that before. Maybe the smaller cons, I don't know, may have that rule, like, just because they don't maybe have the staff to keep track of people going in and out. I don't know. No, I've never seen that.
Sure, absolutely.
So something that I brought to my first con that I have done ever since, because it turned out to be a really good idea, is I bought a big bag of like little fun size candy bars, and because I was by myself. And so whenever I was standing in line for a thing, I would just start like offering candy to people around me. And it was a really nice way to like make a little instant group of friends for that 15 minutes that I was standing around by myself.
Sure. I just want to point out again, giving candy to strangers, another one of these things. Just keep it at the con. Keep it at the con. Don't do it in your neighborhood. Don't do this at home. Just at the con again. Just continue, Tia, but I want to delineate these things so people.
Batman and walk around your neighborhood offering candy to children. You should really definitely do that.
We will be doing the next podcast. I will be doing my part from jail. And
so yeah. I bring an empty water bottle. And because there's always drinking fountains. If you want to really super make friends, throw in maybe a needle and thread, bobby pins, fashion tape, super glue. You'll save some cosplayer's life. They'll be happy that they met you. Even if you're not cosplaying, just be like, hey, I'm your savior. Here's a safety pin.
That's, wow. I mean, you know, that's smooth, Tia. That's,
you know, I strongly feel...
I'm sure someone's probably met their wife that way.
If you do, write us. I would love to hear about it.
Yeah. If you were like, oh, I see you're in danger, here are some needles, and someone was like, oh man, you're the best, let me know, because that sounds romantic, and also like, wow, that could have gone really bad. So.
My general philosophy for cons is be as kind as you can possibly be to everyone that you meet.
Oh, I mean, yeah, why not? I mean, you always hear about these people at these things that, you know, are like, where did you, you know, did you grow up in a barn?
Yeah, so yeah. That's, also, I'll just throw this out there, dudes, especially if you see girls being harassed by con creepers, just walk up to them and be like, "Oh, hey, I'm so glad I ran into you. I was looking for you." Like, you don't know how much
hello
we appreciate
it. Hello,
person
that I know, yeah. That you and I are, you know, yeah, clearly friends beforehand, and will not take kindly to a untoward social interaction in your fashion.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. If you feel safe doing that, it helps out a lot. Yeah, just like look out for each other, be nice to people. This also applies to Artist Alley. Like, I could spend hours in an Artist Alley. I have a rule.
I think we ought to quick explain what that is, sorry. Tia, I was going to say earlier. Yeah. So briefly tell our listeners what that is, what that consists of, what it's for, I guess.
Basically, artists and writers can buy tables in an Artist Alley, and that's where they hang out and sign books and sell their wares, and you can get commissions from them. You could talk to them. And it's my favorite place because you get the big name people, but you also get, you know, people that are kind of just starting out or that you are not familiar with for whatever reason. And so it's a great
equalizer of sorts.
Kind of. And it's just, I always discover the most amazing little treasures and new creators to follow. So I have a con rule that I commission a sketch from someone I've never heard of before at every con that I go to. And okay. I would also just say, so A, bring cash. My rule is that I take out as much cash as I'm allowed to spend in Artist Alley. When it's gone, I'm done. That's my rule. And I try to spend the majority of it on artists I've never heard of before. Usually if I'm making a big purchase, I have planned for it ahead of time. I've probably like saved up for it. And if I can, will use a card for it because I don't like carrying like tons of cash. But
and sometimes you can contact these people before the show,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
A lot of artists on Twitter, they'll say, I'm going to be here. I'm accepting commissions. You know, contact me, PM me, whatever.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, so just, but everyone appreciates when you have cash. A lot of people have this like square readers and stuff now, but you can't always get them to work. And
it's not an exact science.
And I
think
that they get charged for it, you know, so like have cash. It's cool. And like definitely explore artists you've never heard of before. You'll meet some cool people. You'll find new things.
And of course, I'm certain those are usually the people that are not going to charge you an arm and a leg. So,
yes, it's definitely less expensive to get a commission from someone who you've never heard of before than from some big name. Having said that, don't haggle with artists about their prices. Mm-hmm. You know, they get asked to work for free all the time. It's shitty. It's uncomfortable for them when you are like, oh, well, how, you know, could you give me a deal on this? Like, no, don't do that. If you want deals, wait until Sunday and then go shop, because usually, you know, people don't want to bring home all the merch they had made for the to sell at the con, and they might be doing their own deals on the last day. But like, if they offer, great, but don't ask. It's rude.
While on the topic of artists, Allie, let's also discuss sketches, for sure. Example, I know, we have the more formal commission, which obviously I when I think of the sketch and the commission, I know some people, and I even discussed it with Mike in the past, want to know, what are the rules behind sketches? Like, how much do people charge? Are they free? Even if they're free, what am I supposed to do if I feel like... Well, if I feel grateful, I know Mike gets sketches of Gambit. I don't know if he's told you about this. It's hilarious. He has a book he brings to every convention, and it's filled with different sketches of everybody sketching Gambit.
That's awesome. I love that.
It's a good theme. No, it is. A cool unifying theme for his book. But, you know, I was asking him, and I guess I'll ask you here for the listeners, what are the rules involving sketches and how they work and compensating people and... Because I know a lot of people get nervous when they get up to the front of the line about sort of the unspoken social interactions and rules about how all of that works.
Usually, if an artist is open to sketches, there will be a sign on their table saying that they are. Okay. So if they don't have a sign, that's a pretty they've done this before and they know how it works. And so it's probably a good indication that they're not open to sketches. Sketches don't necessarily take just a few seconds. Sometimes they're pretty elaborate. I got some pretty beautiful color sketches at this Emerald City. So, you know, it just depends. I think that if you buy a book from someone and they do a little doodle in it, that can be cool. And I wouldn't necessarily expect to pay extra for that. But you should pay for your sketch, and you should offer to pay up front when you ask, when you arrange for it. Although a lot of times artists will tell me, oh no, just pay when you come back. But I always offer up front because I've seen creators really upset on social media that someone will come back and be like, oh, I changed my mind. And then they don't get paid.
Yeah. Marguerite Bennett posted something this weekend someone who changed their mind, and then she asked what she could do. And of course, the number one person who shows up on the thread is Charles Soule, lawyer. And he's like, well, I have to tell you, you completed the verbal transaction the moment you told them that you were going to do it. And I was like, lawyer.
Oh, man. Yeah, no.
I feel bad for her, but it was just so cute. Charles Soule, lawyer expert, shows up in the thread. Well, I have the answer.
Marguerite, call me. I will buy that sketch. I don't even care what it is.
That just sucks.
It's shitty. Don't be shitty. So offer to pay up front. If they say no, then fine, but give them the option. And also expect that you might need to provide visuals. I actually had an artist take a picture of a picture on my phone so that she could use it as a reference to draw my sketch, because she wasn't that familiar with it. So, you know, just be cool, basically.
Be prepared for that. I mean, they're asking to try to get you what you want. I mean, don't be annoyed by it. They're trying to provide you with a better product, I guess.
And usually, so, my sketches have cost usually anywhere between $15 to $30, so not expensive at all. And usually they're usually black and white. However, I did get a beautiful color watercolor sketch from Stephanie Hans, and it was $70, and it was worth every penny.
Okay, and people should be aware that sketches do have the potential, or commissions obviously have the potential, to go up into the hundreds. I know usually it starts out with small portrait and black and white, and then it just escalates up to whether you want a full body drawing, and if you want it inked, and if you want it colored. And so that's,
I think, that's part of Kevin Wada prices start in the hundreds, and I mean worth every penny. I would pay it if I could get on his commission list, which closes in about 2 minutes when he puts out the word.
Oh no.
Yeah. I set an alarm and I still don't make it.
Oh no.
So, you know, be cool, I think, is the general refrain here.
Yeah. I've heard Mike tell me that some people offer to do sketches for free, but he's told me that usually in exchange he's usually encouraged at that point to either sometimes they'll have like a tip jar for a certain like a charity, it's implicitly suggested you ought to at least buy maybe a book of theirs.
Definitely.
Or that maybe if you're getting a free sketch, the free sketch goes in the book itself.
Yes. Do not go up to an artist and take their free sketch and not buy something from them. That's pretty uncool.
I know a lot of that stuff is helpful because I've heard of people that they get to the front of the line and all they know in their mind is that they want to get something autographed, and they don't realize that there are all of these sort of unspoken rules and procedures and etiquette that that maybe they only find out later, and then they feel terrible because they did one thing or another, and it just
keep in mind that artists are spending a lot of money to be there. So,
I've heard most, if they're lucky, break
exactly.
even a lot of the time. That's like best end scenario, is you come away not losing money.
Right. So just, you know, think about if you had spent a lot of money to be there, would you, like, sometimes I'll start talking to an artist and I'm not going to buy anything from them. But if someone comes up to the table and looks like, and like starts looking at their stuff, I'll step to the side so that the artist can then potentially like sell something to this person, because I even their time is valuable, and it may be that they're perfectly happy to chit chat with you and that's cool, but you know, give them the opportunity to sell some stuff to this other person, and I'm sure they'll really appreciate that.
Definitely. Are there any other general tips or things racking your brain that you either, you know, maybe think, oh, well, geez, this is a big, you know, mistake I made once and I don't want anyone else to do it? Or are there certain items that you, any other things that maybe people always say you need to bring but really aren't that necessary?
I would say the general list of like bring snacks, bring water. I don't wear comfortable shoes because I like to look cute, but like if that's important to you, I guess do that.
Yeah. Okay. Same here. Screw the comfortable shoes.
Make sure that, okay, so here's the thing. Like, if the doors open at 10 and they let people start lining up at 8, you're probably not getting in until 10:30. So do yourself a favor and show up at 10:45 and you'll walk right in.
Oh.
Does that make sense?
Okay.
Like,
No, it does. I mean, you can either choose to be in a line or not.
Yeah, exactly. Unless you like really need to get that Kevin Wada sketch and he opens it and then it's going to close like the second the doors open. Like, get there at 8 and be at the front of the line and like make a beeline for his table the second the doors open. But barring something like that where you like absolutely positively have to be the first person there, there's no point if you get there. If they start letting people line up at 8 and you get there at like, you know, any time past, I would say, I don't know, 8:30, 8:45. Like, by the time you get into the show, it's going to be, other people will have gotten there already. Just do yourself a favor, give it 45 minutes, and you don't have to wait in line.
Okay. Excellent.
And my other piece of advice would be, do a little Google search and find out what kind of after parties there are. A lot of times you can buy tickets for them for like $15, or you could just go to them for free, and it's a lot of fun, and it's a lot of, you know, it's a cool mix of people who tend to go to those things, like creators and fans. And also, you know, it's just a neat way to like further distill the group of people that might overlap with your interests that you'd be interested in meeting.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess one of the only other questions I would have is, if someone is at a convention and they're worried about keeping up on like what's going on or late minute changes, last minute changes or things like that, how are those things usually addressed? Like, do they actually have like an intercom thing? Do they tend to have a Twitter page for the actual convention itself? How do you stay in the know while you're at the con?
I follow the con's Twitter, and that tends to work for me, you know, so definitely. Also, some cons have apps that you can download. I don't know. I don't know how, if they update those though as quickly as they would be able to update Twitter. So Twitter would be my choice.
Well, I mean, if there's nothing else you can think of, I think we've racked your brain pretty thoroughly, and hopefully people have a better idea of why they may or may not want to go to a con, or if they are thinking about it, sort of the bigger mistakes and whatnot that they can avoid.
Yeah, I hope that's helpful. It's super fun. I really love it. And if you're considering it, just buy a day pass and just check it out.
Thanks for listening to the I Read Comic Books podcast. Our producer is Mike Rappin, and our editor is Xander Riggs. Our host and co-producer for this episode is Nick White. This week's music was brought to you by Mr. Troy and Infinity Shred. You can find more of Mr. Troy on Bandcamp at mrtroy.bandcamp.com, and you can find more of Infinity Shred at infinityshred.bandcamp.com. If you're looking for new podcasts, check out the Podern Family hashtag on Twitter. With thousands of creators, you can find almost any type of podcast. Check out the hashtag and support small podcasts like us. You can find more of this podcast at our website, ircb.us, or wherever you find your podcasts. If you enjoy this show, tell someone about it. Rate us online. Write to us. You can send us your comic convention stories and thoughts at ircb@destroythecyb.org. We're on Twitter at ircbpodcast. We're on Tumblr at destroythecyborg. And we even have a subreddit, iReadComicBooks.reddit.com. And again, from all of us here at the podcast, thank you for listening.